Bad on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin. It is a football week, and I mean a real football week. The Chicago Bears week one is coming this Sunday. And listen, now it's crunch time. Let's talk about some rankings on where we think this team is going to end up. Of course, we're excited about this defense, but the offense is a big question right now because it's just something we haven't seen on the field. Going to discuss where we think this Bears offense should rank this season, especially with some of the interesting games that they have in the second half of that schedule, all being divisional games. How will that end up playing out? We'll talk about all that and more because we got captains announced, the first ever rookie captain for the Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams makes the cut. We'll talk about all that more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, lead a five-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, Labor Day's come and gone, but it was a work day for us.
It was. And, you know, we get the news about the captains, which is 15% of the roster, more or less. Eight captains of the 53.
Yeah, for real.
Which, you know, I know a lot of people are skeptical of that, but it does show you how different this roster looks than it has the last 2 years, and how Matt Eberflus had some hard decisions to make. And sometimes, you know, if you've got that much leadership, you might as well reward those players. But a lot to take away just from how they decided they wanted to structure their leadership and how they're expecting those specific eight players to be the ones to lead this team this year. And starting week one, I mean, that comes down to the wire for Caleb Williams when he gets named captain. It's his first start. He's going to be going through his own ups and downs this season, but, you know, also has this, you know, significant burden. And a burden doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's just, it's a responsibility for this guy as he's learning how to play at the NFL level, that he's also going to have to show the leadership to make sure that his team gets off to the fast start and stays in the right realm going forward. Because you remember what happened last year.
Yeah.
And the Bears, like, that has been a talking point for the last couple of weeks, really, since the start of training camp. How do you prevent against the letdown that this team had against the Green Bay Packers last year? Because I know that some people want to forget about it, but there was a lot of hype around the Bears last year. Too much so that it, you know, manifested itself in an 0-4 start, and everybody was wondering if there were going to be firings after that. But the energy is different this year because I think that they had some pretty stark learning experiences that they had to go through that first month of the season that they now know, okay, let's not do it that way again. Let's do things differently. And certainly the injuries help because they were a lot more injured of a team going into that week one game against Green Bay than they are set up right now to be against that Tennessee Titans team.
No, and I love the fact that you bring up last season, right? Because I'll say this, I don't feel like the energy around the mindset that the team has has changed, right? But I think that Flus has changed how he's channeled that energy. And I think that's been one of the things that is very exciting heading into this Titans game. Because remember last season, we're all sitting there at practice just going like, all right, guys, like, it doesn't look great. Like, what do you guys see that we aren't seeing? Like, are you doing something in the time we don't see you that we're not seeing? Because it doesn't look like a superstar level talent and you're not playing in any of the preseason games. And we just kept getting, wait till week one, you guys will see. Wait till week one, you guys will see. And week one came, we were like, what the heck are we watching for? What'd Flu say last year? What's up yours? Yeah, I mean, like that's kind of what we got in week one of the Packers game last year. So, like, seeing, I think it's the fact that they kept the mindset. I like the mindset, but seeing the changes that Flus made to training camp, to his approach to preseason, adding in that, as we talk about the captains, right, the leadership that Caleb Williams has shown as a young player and brings, and you can feel that energy in the building, I think that you get kind of a different, I'm hoping for a different result, but it feels like they're much further along than they were week one last season.
The talent alone, I think, helps that feeling because, you know, there are a lot of guys who were part of this roster last year that were part of that week one letdown that are no longer here. And when I talked to Jalen Johnson about this yesterday, and you talk to players and you get their feeling on where this team is and the changes that have been made, they went through the hard part to get to where they are right now, to where it finally feels like week one this year, there's an expectation. Like, I don't know if everybody's going to pick them to win. I believe that by the end of the week, depending upon how we, you know, see what Tennessee's injury situation is, what the Bears is, like all of that, I think I'll be picking the Bears to win in week one. And I did not pick them to win last year against Green Bay. This is a much more formidable opponent for them.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know what Green Bay was going to be with Jordan Love. It was his first start, but there were still all of these question marks, you know, with the Bears that actually like weighed heavier than, hey, like, how is Jordan Love going to be good or not? With Tennessee, you know what state Tennessee's in right now.
Yeah.
Like, they're much more like in the position of like starting over, new head coach, new number one running back, new receiving core around Will Levis. Like, the defense is still really good, but it just feels like the Bears have been building towards this, where like to a point where it's like, all right, they're ready to contend versus where the Titans are, and much and having like much more tempered expectations, being in the AFC South. It's going to be a dogfight for the two teams, at least two teams ahead of them. I don't know where to put Jacksonville on any of that, but like, I think with the Colts and certainly with the Houston Texans, they're starting out, whereas the Bears have been building towards this for a while, to where if you pick them this week, if they're favored this week, that should not surprise anybody, considering what they did to get their roster to this state this offseason.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, you know, you feel confident about one side of the ball for sure. The defensive side of the ball. I mean, like, listen, I get it that you revamped your entire offense. You've got a new running back in there. It's a lot easier to stop a guy when it's not Derrick Henry back there. So, and I'm going to tell you this right now, like the Bears defense, like running against them this season is going to be an exercise in futility. Like they still have that much of a bite on that defensive side of the ball, especially in the run game. The pass game is going to be the question. Can Will Levis get the best of them? But I think the question is still, even with all the weapons, even with all the additions, even with adding Shane Waldron, what is this offense going to be? Is this offense going to be one that is a formidable offense? Is this one? Is it going to be one that does some of the things that we saw in preseason, even though that was versus vanilla defenses? Or is this going to take time to get going? Because Tennessee, like you said, a great team to start with, but they're not exactly a team that you can just go, we don't really have to worry about them.
Of course. I mean, there's no team, I don't think, on their schedule. Even though like weeks 1 through 10 feels like that's where you've got to start building your wins if you're the Bears, because week 11, you play the Packers, and that starts your 6 of 8 final weeks or division opponents. So this is the time where you cannot take anything lightly or think, okay, we're going to slow roll our way in to the season. And all the questions that we have of the Shane Waldron offense, how are you going to utilize three receivers where any one of them, in theory, could be a number one on someone else's team? You have two tight ends that are very good. You ran a lot of two tight end sets in Seattle. How are you going to balance that, knowing that your wide receiver group is as good as it is? And then, of course, like, you also have this really good backfield. Like, there's a lot of things that start to get answered on Sunday, and those questions that we've had that have gotten no answer whatsoever. And you can see some of it in preseason games, but not the way, like, when you ask these questions, it's, oh, we're going to be multiple, we're going to be balanced. Well, eventually there's going to be a side that wins out. And my question, since the time that we found out Roma Dunze was coming here, after knowing what this receiving core is can the Bears actually be a pass-first offense? Like, when have we ever had the thought that a Chicago Bears-led offense could actually be a prolific passing unit when it ranked 27th last year? And not even just using last year as an example. Think about, like, the last 10 years, the last 15 years. This is a run-the-ball sort of team, a team that wants to ground and pound and win games on defense. That mentality has shifted. Everything for the last 2 years has shifted to the offense. So now we get to see, starting out this Sunday against the Titans, how are they using this passing game to set up everything else to where it's not the last resort to a lot of ways to get the ball down the field, that they trust that the passing game is strong enough to beat the secondary of the Tennessee Titans, that Caleb Williams can find windows, find his receivers, get his guys involved, and, you know, they can throw out a ton of different personnel groupings, be very multiple in their looks, and still attack a team to where it's more of a high-octane approach than it is this conservative, okay, we're going to pass when we need to on the early downs, we're going to be looking to run the ball. Like, that made them so predictable the last few years.
Yeah.
If the passing game can be what it's been chalked up to be, that makes them a much more dangerous team than they have been offensively in a very long time.
And I think what's going to be interesting this season is the utilization of the running back. Is it going to be used as a running back, or are you going to use DeAndre Swift as kind of that, right? The short passing game is basically your run plays, the screen passes, the little flips over the to the edge, right? Like the small passes, the short passes, are they going to use those more for DeAndre Swift, who is probably fine doing that because it's something that he's been good at, but also, right, are you going to utilize more of that running back room with Khalil Herbert, who's still, you know, as much as people are like, they're going to get rid of Khalil Herbert, he's still a part of this team. It doesn't seem like they're ready to move on from him.
No.
And
I mean, Roshan Johnson's hurt. So, like, I mean, that's something that we saw at practice, like very light practice on Monday. Roshan was on a bike.
Yeah.
Kind of bringing this back full circle to, like, you know, we thought in the offseason, okay, going into training camp, time's ticking for Khalil Herbert, because if Roshan Johnson was ready to go and if he was ready to assume that RB2 role, you probably have a nice asset to either field as you know, as trade bait in Khalil Herbert, or somebody that you'd be okay moving on from. That's not the way it played out. It played out to where he got a ton of run. Khalil Herbert got a ton of run in the preseason and is RB2 until he's not, behind DeAndre Swift. But how? In what scenarios is he going to be called up to be out there in the running game, knowing that DeAndre Swift is going to get a bulk of these carries? But it's not just carries. Like, you're right, Pat. Like, we saw it all throughout training camp, the screen game with DeAndre Swift, the passes that he, you know, the part of the passing game, the short passing game, the checkdowns, the, you know, these dump offs, all of these the things pitches, that, like, we never really got a consistent feel for that in previous iterations of this offense the last couple of years. And that's what DeAndre Swift is so good at. And that's an element that just Philly chose for whatever reason not to use him in it with as much. Now I think that's going to honestly be a pretty big weapon for them to move the ball, because, you know, they want to get to the edges, and he's shown that he can. He had as good of a camp as anybody did offensively. And on top of him being, you know, an every down sort of back, they're going to use him in those situations too. So we'll have to start seeing, okay, when does Khalil Herbert hear his number called on Sunday against the Titans, and what situations? Because we know, like, pass protection is a big part of what they're going to need. Is that going to be on DeAndre Swift? Is that going to be on somebody else? I'm really curious to see what the usage is for these running backs, and when their running back's not named DeAndre Swift, how they end up divvying up those carries and in what situations. Is it going to be in the red zone? Is it going to be on third downs? Is it going to be on early downs? Like, how the running back usage, we talk so much about this passing game, and you have three number one receivers. What about the running backs? Like, they're going to play a huge role in this. You take a look at Shane Waldron's offense last year. They were 11th in rushing and 23rd in passing. That's him in Seattle. Like, that's, you know, not, I mean, outside of like where the Bears were last year, like 27th in passing, as I mentioned, and then they were, you know, second, I believe, in rushing, if I still have that correct. Yeah, like, they're second in rushing, 141 yards a game, 27th in the passing. Like, that's really not too far off, like 11th to 23rd from what Seattle was last year to where the Bears were last year. So how much different does it look and does it feel is what we get to start to see against the Titans.
Yeah, and that's been my question the whole time. Listen, as much as we can sit here and say, you know, Shane Waldron's got this new bevy of weapons, there's going to be so much more. Shane Waldron had DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. He had Tyler Lockett. Like, it's not like there were no way. He had Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He had, yeah, I mean, like, it's not like there weren't weapons in Seattle that he was able to utilize. Year one, it worked out perfectly. Year two, right, it kind of came back down to earth a little bit, and that's where you started to see some of that friction happen. I think what's interesting as well to see is, and I'll ask you this, because the vibe we get from Shane, especially with how he calls the passes and when we're talking to him, is that he feels, it almost feels like he feels comfortable with where the offensive line is, especially with his utilization of 12 personnel, right? Do we see less of what we saw last season, where Roshan Johnson basically had to be in there because if he wasn't, Justin Fields was getting killed? Do we see less of that this season with the use of Naked, some of that use of Boss, and the fact that they're throwing that much 12 personnel out there, where maybe you don't need as much of that blocking running back as we needed last season.
Well, the play action usage, like we saw so much of that in the preseason, whether it was Caleb Williams, whether it was other quarterbacks that the Bears had in there, you know, rolling your quarterback away from pressure, like that's playing to the strength of QB1 in a lot of ways. So, you know, what does that do for the offensive line? Like they use multiple tight end sets because they are relying on guys to block too. Like, I don't know if that's going to change all of that, all that much. I do think that the play action usage though, the bootlegs, like that's what it, Caleb Williams is so accurate when he's on the move. And why wouldn't you tap into that part of his skill set as much as you can? And of course, like, you know, you've got to sell play action. Like linebackers are, you know, smart enough at the NFL level to know, okay, like we're going to sell out for this. We're, you know, we're not going to bite on the fake. But they've done that. And I had the numbers, I have the numbers here, like from Seattle and what he did, like his play action usage in Seattle over the last couple of years was pretty consistent. You know, they were, I had it here, 15th last two seasons. So that was 27% from 2012 to 2021. So all of those Russell Wilson years. And then, you know, last 2 years when Shane didn't have Russell Wilson, it jumped up considerably. And within that, the multiple tight end formations, fourth highest usage in the NFL from 2022 to 23 after ranking 19th that first, those first 10 seasons when they had Russell Wilson. It's, you know, it, you just try to figure out, okay, what, how much of it is this going to carry over from what Seattle did, what Waldron was comfortable calling in Seattle, knowing that you mentioned those names that he had in Seattle. That's not a, that receiving core is no slouch. Like, but is it, you know, with as much talent as he has here and realizing that there's, you know, you've got to be multiple within this, how different does it look? I don't know the answer to that yet. I don't think anybody does, but I do think that the upgrades that they've made here specifically, like with their skill position guys on the outside, is that's, you're going to have a much more, you know, adept passing offense than you've had in previous years. And that can help where the Bears are, you know, for like taking a look at like Shane Waldron's numbers. So like they're 15th in snaps under center, 13th in play action. This is his entire time in Seattle, mind you, and 11th with motion at the snap. Like they didn't utilize as many quarterback design runs that we saw with Justin Fields the last couple of years. So maybe that's not something that they tap into. We didn't really see it. We didn't see like any of that during the preseason with Caleb Williams. So I think you're trying to look at the trends that you did see and what you do know about this offense from the entire preseason, including training camp, not just a couple of, you know, two preseason games for Caleb Williams. It's finding what the themes were, what they did offensively, and seeing what's going to carry over to the regular season, because by now they've been repping it for, by the time we get to kickoff, it's 50 days. Like that's the identity that you're taking in this offensive line, knowing that it's going to be Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, Coleman Shelton, Nate Davis, and Darnell Wright. That's the group you're going in with. That's the group you've been playing with for the last couple of weeks. Like what you've seen already is what you should expect to see more of, because it's pretty much been consistent now since that Buffalo game.
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you brought up the unofficial depth chart today. Mm-hmm. Cause looking at that, they basically got Ryan Bates as the backup right guard. Is it just the experiment's done?
I think it's for now. Because he came back to practice, did a little bit last week. He was there yesterday on Monday. They didn't really do anything Monday. It was a very light session. But remember, he's been dealing with an injury that, from my understanding, is something that it didn't just like pop up. This is something he's been dealing with. Yeah. So we'll have to see like how, if that affects him at any point this season, like if it's something that's going to like, if it's a pain tolerance thing, or if it's just that he's got to play through it, or maybe it gets better. I don't know. But he, as you were seeing where he is on the depth chart right now, that doesn't surprise me, because it's not like the Bears could have continued like, okay, he's back, let's start up the center competition again. That would never happen the week of a game. But it's good depth to have, knowing that he can play multiple positions on the interior, and that if you, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to stick there though. Like there's a very good chance that, hey, if things don't go according to how they hope this offensive line is going to look, they can make changes in season. I've seen players before get surpassed on the depth chart in the middle of the year. We've seen players bench. We saw it last year at the center position. with Cody Whitehair. Yeah. You hope for, or they hope for their sake, that they don't have to deal with that. But that's always a door that they're going to leave open to get Ryan Bates into the lineup. And hell, even Karan Amagaji at some point, you know, he's your swing tackle. Like, you know, when he's ready to go, he will be the swing tackle. I'm not saying that I expect him to compete for the left tackle spot this year, but the more reps he's getting in practice during the week, which is hard when you're not a starter, but the Bears are going to have a chance to watch those players behind the scenes. And if they feel that they can make a move to best suit this offense by changing who's in the starting lineup, they will.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially when you enter the season with Doug Kramer as your backup. No disrespect to Doug Kramer, but you would have hoped to have that Ryan Bates, Coleman Shelton dynamic there, where Bates wins the job, Shelton has played center, dynamic backup. Didn't work out that way because of injury, so we'll see how that ends up playing out if the guys get moved around. And, of course, you've got Ryan Bates as the insurance for Nate Davis, who has been somebody who's been often injured throughout his time here in Chicago. Let's put a bow on the offensive conversation with this. The top 10 last year offenses, Courtney, were San Francisco, Baltimore, Miami, Dallas, Detroit, Buffalo, Philly, Los Angeles, New Orleans, and Cleveland. Their points per game basically ranged from 28.4 for San Fran to 22.1 for Cleveland. Will the Bears be in that conversation of averaging around some of those point totals? 22.1 feels crazy that was top 10. I'm not going to lie. But we've also got some great defenses in this league.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people look at the personnel part of this offense and say, oh, this should be a top 10 offense based on how much talent there is. I get the argument, and I don't think that you can poke too many holes in like how talented of a receiving core they have. You can say that they have the best receiving core in the NFC North if you want to, and I don't think many people are going to argue with you. You can look at some of the other ones in the NFL and say, okay, maybe they're like top five, top six with DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Roma Dunze, but it's still, I think it's too early just to be able to like say without question that they're going to be a top 10 offense, because we don't know what Caleb Williams is going to look like truly just yet. Like, his sack percentage is something that I know I've seen some people project that it might be a little higher than usual early on in the season, which could elicit some panic on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Some of that could be on him. Not saying it's a similar case to what we saw from Justin Fields last year, but he was averaging one of the longer times to throw during the preseason. It wasn't just because the line was blocking great and he had all the time in the world to throw back there. I think that some of that's on Caleb holding onto the ball too long. Could that affect the offense early on? Like, I think that's something that's a rhythm thing for him that he's going to have to get into during the season, but it shouldn't, you know, raise red flags if they are still trying to figure that part out throughout the first six, seven weeks of the season. But, you know, I think the goal for them, where they should be like in total for offense, passing and rushing, I would say like a top 15 offense this year, this first season, should be the goal. Like, that's, you're too talented to not think that they could reach that level. And some of this too, like, I heard Waddle and Sylvie doing their most important Bears of 2024, like their countdown. And they had Shane Waldron at number two or number three. That's the correct answer. How does Shane Waldron call these offenses? Because offenses were middle of the pack, more or less, in Seattle. It wasn't like it was that big of an upgrade from what the Bears had under Luke Getsy. A big reason they'll get to top 15, maybe even top 10, then I think that's ambitious, but any ranking. A lot of that's based on the offensive coordinator and what he's going to call, and knowing that he does have a great group of weapons here, how does he utilize them? Like, so much of that is on the offensive coordinator and what he can do to put this team in the best situation to move the ball down the field and win games. So I think that most of the things that we've seen, I know some of these rankings are a little older, just on like who's going to have a top 10 offense this year.
Yeah,
I think that it's fair to not put the Bears in there just yet.
No, I agree. And I think to say that it's needed, I think, dismisses how good this defense can be.
Correct.
And what we expect.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody would say, I mean, I certainly would not say they need to be a top 10 offense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this defense, if all goes according to plan, I think that they will go get a pass rusher at the deadline if things are not great among this unit. Like, if they still are having trouble getting after the quarterback. But They made two nice depth additions via trades with Darrell Taylor and Chris Williams. They are still probably pretty thin at defensive tackle, something that, you know, we'll see if Zach Pickens is able to get out there. I didn't see him yesterday at practice. I could have missed him, but like I did not see him initially. There's still questions there that, you know, are we going to see a big change, big enough change to say, okay, this is a top five defense? Because I'm still adamant that I will not put them in top five defensive category until I see those sack percentages go up, the pressures go up, the quarterback hits, not just the sack numbers alone, like, but everything else that pressures quarterbacks. But if you have a defense that's that good, that's the reason everybody talked about Caleb Williams being in one of the best situations ever. It's not all on him. He doesn't have to go out there and throw four touchdowns a game for this team to win and have, you know, the weight of this team, wins or losses, all fall on him. This defense should have a really strong outing. Again, they're much more experienced than the quarterbacks they're going to face the first couple weeks of the season. Teams, I don't really expect Tennessee or Houston to regress all that much this season, but there's tape now on CJ Stroud. Teams have had a whole year to learn about the quarterback down for the Houston Texans, a team that the Bears play week two, and to game plan for him and to scheme against what Bobby Slowick is calling. The Bears have a unit that has an all-pro, second-team all-pro cornerback. The strength of that defense is a secondary. A pass rush led by Montez Sweat, a solid linebacking core. Like, there are a lot of games early on that they should have the edge in because of the inexperienced quarterbacks, first, second-year guys that they're going to be going against. And that should have everybody in Chicago on this team feeling like, okay, if Caleb gets off to a rough start, if it doesn't look great throughout four quarters, you can still lean on your defense to help you through these games. And not just like, oh, well, that's the last resort, but like that is still a strength of your team that you want to be able to boast. You just hope that the offense isn't like the reason that you don't win in spite of the offense. Like, that's what it was the last couple of years. You want to win because of the offense too, but there might be times where you're going to have to win because of your defense, and that is an okay place to be in.
Yeah, and it's to me what excites me the most about the position that Caleb Williams is coming into, because I said this before. People talk about the bumps in the road. I think I said this on the post-game show. People were calling in talking about, oh, there's going to be bumps in the road. Doesn't have to be major bumps, right? This doesn't have to be driving through the South Side. It can be you had a bump. It was a bad game. Mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud had, I think he had a three-interception game in like week four last season or week five last season. It was like, oh, there it is. There's the struggle. We really didn't see him struggle after that.
Yeah.
Like, that was the one bump that he had in the road, and then all of a sudden they're in the playoffs. They're a dominant team. They're figuring things out that nobody expected them to figure out. I think that having high expectations on this team is okay. Understanding that you have to have some that are measured, but like even the numbers on, you know, maybe Caleb takes more sacks. I saw that because of holding on to the football too long. It depends on what he's doing with the ball.
Yeah,
I watch Pat Mahomes hold on to the football a lot. I watch Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, right? But then when they make a play, we don't bring up that while they hold on to the football too much with guys like that. So if Caleb is able to go out there and make plays, and I love how Ryan Pohl said it, lean on the team. You don't got to make the 50-yard pass down the field. I've watched you flip the ball to DJ Moore, and he can take it 60 yards.
Like leaning on your skill is huge, and it's not just lip service. It's a real thing to where – early on, when they talk about him being a point guard, just do what you need to do. Don't be extra in those moments. Be extra when they need you to, in the low red zone, in the gotta have it situations on third down. Be extra there. Be Superman there. Not every play has to be Superman. Not every play has to like be, okay, Caleb Williams, do or die. Like, sometimes it's just a quick dump off to your running back, which is why they went out and got DeAndre Swift. Like, just using that as an example. Like, you have a lot of talent around you. You know, let the Bears get their return on investment too. They paid a lot of money for these people. Like, you know, let the quarterback distribute, because sometimes being a game manager, I know that like that word is got such a weird connotation to it. Like, there are moments where Patrick Mahomes is managing the game. There are moments where Josh Allen, the quarterbacks you brought up, because that's what's required of them, that you don't have to be A+ all the time in terms of the flash. Cause sometimes A+ is, hey, he had the right read there. It's quick pass. He got it off to, you know, he went through his progressions and he got it to where it needed to be. And lo and behold, they moved the ball. But that's what it is.
Yeah. No, 100%. I think that you brought up Pat Mahomes. Like, last season was a lot of Pat Mahomes managing, because he's like, oh, these guys aren't Tyreek Hill. Travis is getting old. I don't care how many times Taylor shows up. He is trying to figure this out, like, just like we all are. So, like, You have to have those moments, and that's okay. And listen, DeAndre Swift better catch a lot of passes for $7 million. I'm not going to bring up no running back conversation on him, but you better catch a lot of passes for $7 million, and I need 1,000 yards out of you rushing. Before we get out of here, Courtney, let's talk about the captains. Appreciate you guys for tuning in, showing love. Hit the like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Were there any surprises on the captains list? We get our first rookie captain ever in Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. And this is voted on not just by the staff, but also by the players as well. I know a lot of people were a little bit surprised not to see Montez Sweat's name on there. Were there any surprises for you on the captain's list?
I wouldn't say surprises, because you can look at like the eight that they have on there and make a case for all of them. I mean, you have one of the youngest players on the team in Caleb Williams, who very quickly and very authentically bought this team, you know, bought this, what is it? Win everybody over. So they bought everybody over. No, he's won everybody over. Yes. Like, and that's, you know, there are a lot of people wondering, oh man, Justin Fields is gone. How is he going to do it? Is there going to be some sort of mutiny in the locker room? Like, no. People want to win. People get behind winners. It's not hard to understand. Yeah. And when this talented player comes in and starts showing that, you know, I'm sure that if he struggled against this defense during training camp and if he was just having a rough outing, the Bears probably wouldn't have made him a captain, because it would have been like, whoa, that's too much pressure on
you. Yeah.
To make him a captain, and yes, this is a player-led thing. That's what Flus has done historically last couple of years. Most captains are voted on across the league by their teammates.
By the players, yeah.
Like, they see that he can handle it, because you wouldn't put somebody out there. It's like, whoa, like, you know, we may like him, but like, God, this guy has got a lot on his plate. Let's not add another thing. He's shown the Bears, he's shown his teammates, most importantly, that he can lead them while still learning how to do stuff himself. And I really do think that the biggest thing for him coming in, knowing that this is going to be his team, but you can't come in day one back in May and be like, this is my team. Like, I'm going to start implementing my leadership. He was quiet for a while. Not that he was having issues being vocal out there. I meant quiet in the sense that he was learning to figure out, okay, how can I be myself out here? How can it not feel forced? And how can I still like garner the respect of others that I'm trying to learn from, knowing that I'm coming to a veteran laden team that is relying upon me to help get this team into winning territory. So I think he did that. I think that's a big reason why, on top of them seeing, hey, he's had some really good days against a defense, like it's game recognized game. Like, that's a big part of why a 22-year-old rookie quarterback was named your captain this year. And then Mercedes Lewis, like it's like one end of the spectrum to the other. You have a 40-year-old who, you know, Mercedes has done, he's been the eyes and the ears for Matt Eberflus in a lot of ways, of letting Flus know, like kind of taking him into parts of the locker room, parts of the team that the coaches don't get to see, and just being able to gauge, hey, where are things? Like, are there things I'm not seeing? Are there issues that I need to be aware of? Like, what's the pulse on how people are feeling after losses? And having been here through that last year, he's garnered the respect of his teammates, of this coaching staff, of this front office. He's a vital piece of this. Like, it's not just, oh, let's name eight guys captains because we have eight nice guys. Like, there's more than that on the team, but like, I think there's different sorts of leadership. So you have Mercedes, who's seen everything, Caleb, who's seen nothing. Tremaine Edmonds, a guy who won in Buffalo, was part of a lot of AFC East title teams, somebody who knows what it takes to win. Same thing with TJ Edwards. He went to a Super Bowl 2 years ago. Like, having guys like that lead your team, like true winners. Like, there's winners like Jalen Johnson who have been on teams that have never won anything, but somebody who is so immensely talented that it's like, yeah, get guys to follow him, to lead, to take his lead. Like, that's the example he's setting. Then you have guys who are culture builders, that have been on teams that have won. Like, striking the balance. Like, I think they honestly have like a perfect conglomerate of eight players with a variety of experiences that help like kind of check every single box of leadership that you would want this team to have, whether it's from a talent perspective to a lead by example perspective. That's DJ Moore. DJ Moore isn't going to be the rah-rah guy going out there hyping up the team the way that a Tremaine Edmonds might. Tremaine's a very vocal leader. Like, you have different styles of leadership, and the way that Flus is doing this, going from four season-long captains to eight, is allowing just there to be somebody for everybody on this team. if that makes sense.
No, yeah, 100%. And I thought even, you know, the addition of a guy like Kevin Byard, who not even a part of this team last year, yep, getting to know everybody, kind of figuring it out. But the entire time, he's been somebody who's acclimated himself in. When we saw Jaquan go out, and you're getting Elijah Hicks in there, he's always talking to Elijah Hicks. You know, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to attack this. Always working with the young guys. Like when you have that mix in there at that, as your captains at those leadership positions, I think that it is, like you said, right, there's somebody for everyone to go to. And to me, that's what makes this team, in my mind, that's what gives them the opportunity to be special. I'm not going to say they're special yet, but it's what gives them the opportunity to be special. And it's how they've been put together, where you've got these guys from different walks, but all of the walks are successful. Outside of Jalen Johnson, who's been here and he's seen it, but like, everybody else has been in successful situations and knows how to get the best out of those situations and has been a major reason why those situations were successful. Tremaine Edmonds was one of the main linebackers in Buffalo, right? And TJ Edwards, right? Like when you look at Kevin Byard in Tennessee, like you look at these guys in the spots that they came from, and yeah, maybe they had some struggles. Like last year, Byard had some struggles. I think that was probably more the team that he ended up getting shipped to, but when you see that dynamic of like, this is what it took for us to be successful, let me bring that here, and you're mixing those worlds, I think that that's the perfect mix of everything. And then the thing about Caleb, to me, having him a part of this, is there are like leadership meetings. So like all of these captains are going to be meeting together. Caleb's getting to learn from all these different worlds at once. That to me is exciting for the Spirit.
And you know, it's a small sample size, but being a franchise quarterback in the NFL means that you are not just like the guy on the field, but you're the guy everywhere else. It's visibility. It's how you speak publicly. It's being the player that they can defer to as like, okay, he's the representation of us. They learn that very quickly in less than five months of him being here. Oftentimes it takes longer for younger players to prove that they can be that for their team. I mean, but it's also shown you, DJ Moore was a captain for the first time in his career last year when he first got to the Bears. He hadn't been here a minute before they're like, hey, you know, we need you. Same thing with Tremaine Edmonds. He was a captain last year, first year player. Like there are guys who have been the building blocks of this team that the Bears have said, hey, we're going to build around you. Cole Kmet, a captain for that reason. Jalen Johnson, a captain for that reason. And then there's others who from the jump, they're like, all right, we see something here. We appreciate and are going to prioritize what you bring to the table as a leader for everybody else to get behind. And they set the precedent that way, which I think is, so far, it's worked in their favor.
Yeah, we got a lot of excitement. I love the fact that we got the Cavs. We're doing away with possibly. Flus really didn't give an answer on the
I feel like that's not going to be a thing anymore, because how can you have, first off, there's eight captains. Like, there's not going to be eight guys going out for coin toss. So maybe they like switch it up 4-4 every week.
Yeah.
But or maybe they do offense, defense. I went back and looked, because it like I was trying to figure out, was this the first captain ever? So like they first rookie captain ever that they've had. Like the first time they started documenting this, based on all of the media guide scouring I did, was 2007. They introduced weekly captains in 14, and then there was a stretch from 18 to 21 where they did it too. It's, you know, Flus had done it the last couple of years. I just feel like that's probably something that won't happen, the honorary captain thing, and that's fine. You have eight captains that, you know, can't make everybody a captain. I'm sure
that he was like, yeah, I don't know.
They have game balls. They can go ahead and give those out instead of the captain stuff to honor certain players
based on
specific performances and individual weeks.
I just love that it was like the only thing. He's like, oh, we'll see. I haven't thought about it. It was like, really? This is the one thing you didn't think? You named eight captains. You didn't think about this at all? But I think that the Bears are in a good spot. They got good leadership on this team. Now it's time to put up or shut up. We got a few more days till football is back. My fantasy football lineups are set. I am in three leagues, and I have a lot of waiver wire scouring to do still. I've already made a couple of drops, which it was late round picks. It was tough. But I'm excited for football season to be back, ladies and gentlemen. For Courtney Cronin, it's your boy Pat the Designer. We'll have you covered here every single day on the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Lead a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love.